Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
John Lovitz is in studio. He's back here. He doesn't remember because he probably does so many media appearances.
Billions of interviews.
Last time you sat in a different chair, so we're going to move you around the studio.
Well, no wonder I don't remember.
Yeah. He's going to be at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 8 o'clock. Friday night show, 7:30. Saturday night, two shows, 7:30 and 10. You get tickets at heliumcomedy.com. Are you a Dodgers fan? I have to know this. You grew up in Tarzana, right?
Right. Yeah, I am a Dodgers fan. Yeah, I wish they would have won. That was some game, but I remember it was at 3-1, and I was talking to my manager. He's a big fan watching the game. I said, "That's baseball. It's not over."
That's 31 years.
And my God, two back-to-back home runs and then a grand slam. That was unbelievable.
I felt really bad for the Dodgers.
And the Dodgers won 106 games.
Yeah.
Like, that's gigantic.
Yep.
So everyone thought they're going to the World Series for sure and probably win it. But it's interesting. That's baseball. You just never can give up. And then it's the game part, you know?
Yeah.
When
you grow up in Southern California, I mean, is it because the Angels were there, but everybody was a Dodgers fan, right? I mean,
I grew up in playing Little League in the 60s, and everybody, it was in the Valley. There was probably 100,000 kids playing Little League. I mean, it was huge. And baseball was the biggest sport in the country. And I wanted to be Willie Mays. He was like the Michael Jordan of his day. Or say Michael Jordan is the Willie Mays, you know.
Yeah.
So I was a huge fan of the Dodgers and the Giants, but Willie Mays was really my idol growing up. And then pitchers like Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale, and I got to meet all three of them.
Yeah.
Luckily, which was, you meet them and you feel like you're 10 again.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Sports will do that to you. I think too, as you broke onto Saturday Night Live and stuff, did you have interactions with athletes that recognized you? Was that surreal for you to, like, because you looked up to maybe some of these guys? And
oh, totally.
They knew who you were.
Totally. I mean, not just on SNL. I was in, maybe a couple years ago, I was at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and I saw Joe Namath. He goes, and he said, "John, I'm such a big fan of yours." I'm like, oh my God. I'd met him once before, but it was Joe Namath, you know? Yeah, that always blows me away. When the people you grew up watching know who you are and say they're fans of yours, it's like, yeah, it blows me away.
You have you did A League of Their Own. What was that like in the sports, the sports movie, but you had great actors.
I didn't realize how historical it was till I think after the movie came out, and I felt honored to be in it. And I loved doing it. I had a great time, and I was friends with everybody. All the main people in the movie, I was really good friends with Tom Hanks. And Penny Marshall, I'd lived at her house, and she's like almost like my mom. I mean, I was very close to her and her daughter Tracy, and so I knew a lot of the people in it. So it was like almost like making a home movie. And the part was, The part was great, and I loved baseball. So, and I like old movies. It felt like I was making a movie from the 40s. So I was thrilled. And I love baseball, and then there's all these women. I love women. So it's like three of my favorite things all right there. I was in heaven. I'm like, this is just... I mean, I'm on Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
On the field, doing a scene with all these beautiful women. And it was like making a movie from the 40s. So I love baseball, I love acting, and I love women. It was like all three.
And
so I was very happy.
And watching that movie, like Gina Davis, you had Madonna... Yeah, Rosie.
Yeah, those three. Gina came onto the movie a week before they started shooting. I had never played baseball. Turns out she had athletic ability she never knew. she had. She was doing archery years later, and she ended up close, I think maybe on the Olympic team. I mean, like crazy great. Madonna, I knew Madonna, too, because she'd hosted the show that I did on SNL, the first my first show I ever did.
Really?
And she was there for 2 weeks. And when anybody would host, they always remember you because it was an intense week. And but she was there for 2 weeks. And she would they'd have baseball practice, right? She'd show up to the practice. She'd just run 8 miles. Then she'd stay an hour after the practice. They'd have 3 hours of practice. Yeah. And she'd stay an extra hour doing batting practice. Very dedicated. Rosie O'Donnell, I knew that she was a stand-up, but she really wasn't that famous. We went to see her do her stand-up show, and she started imitating me. You know, and she was like, "I can't believe John Lovitz is here watching me." And then she was very excited. I think it was her first movie, and she was very excited to meet Madonna. She goes, "You know, we have a lot in common, and she's so nice." And she goes, and it was sad. She goes, "We both lost our mothers when we were young, but she couldn't believe she was in the movie." You know.
And you do, like, because you have everybody, you know, I would recognize you from SNL. There are other people that would recognize you from other places. But when you do a movie like A League of Their Own that still runs, do you still see it? You flip through the channel, you see it on, will you stop and watch it?
If I saw it on, yeah. It's, you know, some act, like Tom Hanks, he's made so many classic movies, which is why he's such a giant, you know, movie star, plus he's great, but it's rare, a character actor, it's rare to be like in a great movie. So it's an honor to go like, I was in a great film. Because every movie tries to be great. They're all trying to be doing the best they can and work really hard to be great. And it's just everything has to come together, thousands of elements to make it all work.
Yeah.
So when it does, you feel very fortunate that you get to be in something like that.
When you're in a show, or maybe you're on SNL, or maybe even in A League of Their Own, and you see other performers who are performing at a high level, did it make you want? I've heard other people say, "I don't want to embarrass myself here. I want to stay on par." Or how competitive did it get with SNL, with trying to outdo each other and be great?
Well, it was very competitive because you'd write 30 to 40 sketches a week, and only 8 would make it on air. So Dana Carvey is one of my best friends, but we realized we would talk about it because, and he would say, he'd bring it up. He goes, "We need to talk about this. We're competing against each other, but we're friends." I go, "Yeah, well, how do you feel?" "Yeah, it's weird." I go, "I know. I want you to do well, but at the same time, you're trying to beat the guy up."
Yeah.
And he'd say, "Well, at least we're talking about it." He goes, "It's better we talk about it than pretending it's like not there."
Yeah.
You know, and, but that's, you know, I mean, I remember my second year. You know, they had a lot of whole new cast, and Lauren said to me, "Well, you're going to have a lot of competition this year." And so I don't think the show has to be set up that way, but it's kind of what happens, you know.
Yeah.
But if you look at yourself as like, I'm just going to be as funny as I can in a sketch, and then when I would look at it that way, and then when I'm not in a funny part but just supporting, I'll do the best acting I can.
Yeah.
That being said, I ended up being very competitive as well.
Yeah, John Lovitz is with us. You can catch him tonight at Helium Comedy Club, 8 o'clock show. Be a great date night on a Thursday night. Tomorrow night, 7:30. Saturday, 7:30 and 10 at heliumcomedy.com for tickets. You sang at Carnegie Hall. You've been on Broadway. You've done Yellow Pages ads, movies.
Sitcoms.
What in that spectrum, did you have a moment where you go, "I cannot believe I'm doing this"? Was it Carnegie Hall? Was it something else?
Oh yeah, a lot of those moments, right? Popped my head. When I was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, I was thrilled. You can see it in I mean, I couldn't believe it, and it went really well. It's stuff you dream of, and then it happened. Yeah, singing at Carnegie Hall, it was like, blew me away. Or, I don't know, doing stand-up and doing it well. Now it's been 16 years. But, like, having a goal and I started doing it when I was 46. I always wanted to do it, and I would do little things here and there. But to really do it and be successful at it is very satisfying. And like the stand-up, I just keep trying to get better. Yeah, A League of Their Own, I mean, it was great. I'll tell you one. I saw Woody Allen's first movie when I was 13, Take the Money and Run. And then I go, I want to be a comedian like Woody Allen. And I heard his stand-up albums. Anyway, 29 years later, I'd met him a few times before through Brian Hamill, who's his still photographer, and his brother, Pete Hamill, the sports writer. You know?
Yeah.
So, but I got to be in a Woody Allen movie. And there's one scene where it's just the two of us. And I could not stop smiling. And normally, I mean, I'm happy, but I don't like go around smiling all the time. But he was telling me about the scene, what to do, and I just was beaming, and I just couldn't believe it. That was literally a dream come true.
Yeah.
And then we did the scene, and then I was making him laugh, and he couldn't have been nicer to me. And then they said he wants to reshoot the scene, and he said, "Do you think John will mind?" I go, "Do you think I'll mind? I'll do it all day, every day." I mean, I felt like I was so in sync with him when we did the scene. I'm like, does he feel this? Does he feel this? Doesn't he know? This is the new comedy team, the two of us. How can he not feel it?
Yeah.
Because I was so influenced by him that my timing was basically his timing. So it just synced up perfect for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, does he feel? And then I was making him laugh. And then, you know, and I kept saying to him, you know, look, I became a comedian because of you. And so this is a dream come true. And thank you. And he goes, well, it's my pleasure. I think you'll be fantastic. And then he would go out of his way to let me know that I was doing well. Or he said 3 days later after we shot the scene, he goes, listen, I just want you to know I watched the dailies, which is, you know, the footage. And you kept making me laugh at the end of the scene. And he goes, and I was laughing in the dailies. He goes, and I never laugh at dailies. And I want you to know you kept making me laugh. Like he was letting me know, you know, and which I was really grateful for.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just, you know, it was amazing.
All right. I'm going to stop you right there because we're going to take a quick commercial break. John Levitz is going to stick around. He's going to be here all hour. So we've got him all hour. So much to talk about. I want to ask about making movies. I want to ask about the acceleration of the career of a comic who found himself on Saturday Night Live. I want to ask, too, about Woody Allen coaching you. I think that's really cool stuff, that the fact that you were getting that encouragement from Woody Allen. So John Levitz will be with us all hour. So if you're if you got a friend or a family member who would really appreciate this, text them now. Tell them to get to, you know, Fox Sports Eugene, KORE. That's 1050 AM, 960 AM in Klamath Falls, and of course 750 AM across the Portland area. And you can always stream the show at baldfacetruth.com. More with John Levitz coming up. He'll be here all hour. You got the Bald-Faced Truth statewide. Be right back. John Levitz will be in town tonight, Helium Comedy Club, through Saturday night. Check out his show. Go to heliumcomedy.com. When we left off, we were talking about you were working with Woody Allen, and he was giving you all that great encouragement. And I think it's really neat to see a mentor pupil relationship in getting that kind of encouragement. Do you think?
Well, you're working with your idol. I mean, I wanted to be, you know, I was obsessed with being a baseball player, and to me, Willie Mays was like, you know, God. And I was 12 years old, and my dad said, "There's more to life than Willie Mays." And I remember looking at him thinking, no, there isn't. He's Willie Mays. Don't you get it? It was like how people, you know, Michael Jordan, they go, no, but he's my, you don't get it. He's my, it was that's what Willie Mays was. And then I got in Woody Allen. My dad goes, who do you think you are, Woody Allen? When I was 19, you know, he's always like, I go, and then I have Woody Allen. I'm on the set. I didn't know if I should do a character or a New Yorker because the other three guys were all from New York, including him. I'm from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Do an accent or be me. So and he didn't like questions. So I finally got to ask him. He goes, well, just as long as it's real. So I did a character of a real guy, but Chachi, who was he was Tony Danza's boxing manager, and I met him, and he literally talked like this. How you doing? I have an inflammation.
Yeah.
That's how he talked, literally.
Yeah.
But Woody thought it was too much. So I didn't want to, he goes, just better you do yourself because it doesn't sound real. And I'm not going to argue with him going, no, it's a real guy. Okay. And he goes, anyway, you're funny. He goes, you don't have to do that. Guys like us were already funny. So I go back to my mark. He said it twice, guys like us. I start crying because Woody Allen said to me, guys like us.
Yeah.
You know, like you and me, you know, it'd be like if Willie Mays said, John,
yeah,
you and me, we know baseball, you know, guys like us, we don't have to do this stuff. And you're like, what? And it was validated really like my whole life choice to be a comedian. My idol said, guys like us. I'm like, I'm there. I'm not saying I'm Woody Allen, but when your idol says guys like us, it was just overwhelming. And I start tears coming out of my eyes because my dad goes, who do you think you are, Woody Allen? And now Woody Allen is saying to me, you know, John, you don't have to do that. Guys like us were already funny.
Yeah.
And I go, stop. Jesus, I'm going to lose it.
John Lovitz is with us. You can see him tonight at Helium Comedy Club. 8 o'clock show tonight. Friday, 7:30 show. Saturday, two shows, 7:30 and 10. How fast did it happen for you? Like, a lot of comedians or actors will say, you know, gosh, I was poor. We were living four to an apartment. Then all of a sudden, you know, I'm on a billboard. How fast did that happen for John Lovitz?
Well, you know, I started doing plays when I was in high school. I was 15, did like five plays. And 4 years of college. UC Irvine, I was a drama major. I was there 10 hours a day. I loved it. Did 21 plays, tons of scenes. Then a year and a half for an acting film after college, just camera. Then I went to New York for like 11 months, did the Renaissance Fair and everything. I came back. I started at the Groundlings. I said, I'm going to be a comedian. Crying again, driving there. I'm scared. I get on stage. They go, that was funny, but you could do this. You could do this. I went, I'm home.
Yeah,
they're telling me different ways to goof off, be a class clown. Like, that's what I am. And so that was 2.5 years. And then, a week before I turned 28, I started working. I had one job for 2 weeks when I was 25. So after college, it was like 7 years of nothing. But then when it happened fast. And I was in the Groundlings Theater. I got in the main company in September of 84. And then I had small parts. January of 85, they're an improv group and theater group, 99 Seat Theater. We had a new show, and I was in doing my liar character. We got great reviews in the Hollywood Reporter. And then March, 22nd or something, on a Sunday, I get all these messages on my answering machine that I had to go, congratulations. All these people from the Groundlings, like 20 of them. Congratulations, John. That's great. Congratulations. I don't know what they're talking about. So I called the next day that Tom Maxwell was the artistic director and from North Carolina. I go, Tom, everyone's congratulating me. I go, what's going on? He goes, we're going on the Tonight Show. I go, who? He goes, you and Tim Stack and Don Witter and Mindy Sterling. I go, when? He goes, Kate Benton Air, when? He goes, Thursday. This was Monday. I go, Thursday? Yeah. I go, what? Yeah, they want you to do your liar character and your other piece. And we're screaming. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Because my liar character, it worked half the time and half the time it didn't.
Yeah.
And it was an inside joke between a friend of mine and I. Now I'm doing it on The Tonight Show.
Right.
So I got, anyway, I did it. Went great. That was March 28th. And then in May, a guy, Mike Eisenstadt, who was trying to sign me as an agent. I knew him for 3 years. He was an assistant. Now he's an agent. He goes, I finally can sign you. May 3rd, I said to him, I was a messenger. I said, can you get me extra work on soaps? Because it paid like $90 a day. I was making maybe 40, nothing.
Yeah.
I lived on $600 a week for 7 years. And my dad was a very successful doctor, but he said, after college, you're on your own. Okay. I didn't know what that meant. I found out. Meant crap jobs for 7 years. Anyway, he goes, well, you don't want to do that, but just wait. There'll be auditions in like 3 weeks. So he goes, I'll do it if you want. Just think about it. So the next day I said, okay, I'll wait. And then I got all these auditions. And I got everything I auditioned for. And I got a movie with Charles Grodin. And then he recommended me to Lorne Michaels and Lorraine Newman did. And it just happened then. It happened like crazy fast. And next thing you know, I'm auditioning for SNL and I got it. And that was within a year of getting into the Groundlings. And Paul Rubens, who was Pee Wee Herman, right? I knew him, and he said, my God, he goes, I've never seen it happen so fast to anybody. But it was like, after 13 years of...
13 years overnight sensation.
Yeah, and then boom.
Yeah. the liar character, so by the time we see that, this is like you've been doing it a decade, 15 years?
No, I did it as a joke between a friend of mine and I, a girl I liked. She goes, I like a guy with a fat wallet. And I go, well, my dad just had 15 oil wells come in. I go, well, I am a pathological liar. And then I did it. I thought of a There's the movie The Thin Man. I liked old movies. So there's a character in there, and William Powell is grilling him, and he goes, no, I wasn't there. I didn't rob the bank. I was here. Yeah, that's the ticket. And he said, so I go, I want to play that. Like, yeah, that's the ticket. But then I thought of like Pathological Liars Anonymous. And not if you're in AA, I feel bad for you. It's not funny. But, you know, the people get up, my Joe, and here's my story. So that what if there was like Pathological Liars Anonymous and the guy had to get up and tell his story? I go, well, he would just start lying about it. And it just seemed really funny to me. So those were the first two lines. And we're on the Groundlings. There were six of us on stage. They go, and the exercise is you have to make up a character and say your name and what you do. And then the audience would ask questions. So that was about, I don't know, a year. I'd been doing it about a year and a half before I did it on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
But all I had was the first two lines was like, hello, my name is Tommy Flanagan. I'm a member of Pathological Liars Anonymous. In fact, I'm the president of that organization. So when I would do that in the ground, and that's how it started, and they'd ask questions, and they go, how long have you been lying? This is the first time I ever did on stage, and they go, I don't know what you're talking. What are you talking about? They go, you said you're a pathological liar. And I'm like, I didn't. You just said it. No, I didn't. So I thought that would be funny. So, and then Robin Schiff, who wrote Romy and Michelle, the movie, she was in the ground. She goes, John, you set it up perfect. If you stay in character, you could say anything. I go, oh. I go, really? She goes, yeah, try it. I go, all right. She goes, all right, what's your favorite sport? And I go, bowling. And it just, funny, I went, oh, my God. I didn't even realize it. Because there was this guy, Jim Dean, he'd always come up with the simplest ideas, but they were like really funny, and they wrote themselves. And I unwittingly came up with that, and I realized, oh, gosh. I did it. So, and then that's how I started playing it. And then I wrote a monologue of it, and I would do it in, you know, just making the whole speech.
That collaboration.
And I did that on The Tonight Show.
That collaboration where you are getting other writers and other comics to kind of tell you, hey, I can see the path for you.
Well,
here.
She saw that, and then I wrote it myself. And then I did it on The Tonight Show. And then I did the same thing on the first time I did it on Saturday Night Live. And then the next week, Robert Smigel, who was his first year writing on the show, he was like Triumph the Insult Dog. He said, an electrician came up and said to Lauren, that liar thing's the funniest thing I've seen in years. So then Lauren, I went, oh. And then Lauren said, John, we're going to do the liar again. Why don't you write it with A. Whitney Brown? So that's after that, I did collaborate with Whitney on it, which was great because I didn't know what to do with the character after that. So I always give him 50% credit because he really helped me expand it. And I learned how to write jokes from him. Better jokes, how to write great jokes, and I was great at editing. And he goes, John, you're good. We're a good team. Mm-hmm. You're writing, and we're both writing. But he come up with great jokes, and so would I. But his were, you know, more advanced because he'd been a stand-up for years. And then we both learned from each other, and it was a great collaboration.
How do you balance when? And again, he'll be at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 8 o'clock. Friday, 7:30. Saturday, 7:30 and 10. How do you balance giving your diehard SNL fan who just wants to come, I want to come see The Liar, I want to see John Lovitz, and also evolving as a comic, evolving as a comedian and a writer in a show like the show that you'll do tonight?
Well, I mean, I do a little The Liar for a second, but I really don't do my characters. I tried that in the beginning, and it didn't work. So, and I'm kind of glad, because otherwise I would be repeating the same thing of, you know, forever. So the show is more... But I've done a lot of stuff where I'm just being funny as me on talk shows and everything. So it's more of that. It's just, it's me and my sense of humor and how I feel about the world. And I play the piano. I sing funny songs, a lot of social commentary, some political commentary. But it's through my sense of humor, which is, you know, ridiculous to me. It's silly. It's like silly and smart. You know what I mean?
Do you still look up and
go? But it has to be funny first. You got to be funny. And so it's just, to me, stand-up is you're presenting your sense of humor. And the more I'm really me and true to me, the more they laugh, I've discovered, which is baffling to me, but I guess I'm just funny.
More with John Lovitz coming up. I want to ask you about all the controversy, Kevin Hart losing a job over something he said, all of that coming up with John Lovitz. Chris appreciate everybody who makes this radio show part of their day. Comedian John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live or Eight Men Out or from Carnegie Hall, wherever you remember him. He's been with us all hour. If you've missed any of this interview, I would encourage you to grab the podcast of the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Yesterday, I talked to an older listener through how to get the podcast. And if you are somebody who does not podcast and you have an iPhone, it's really easy. You just take that purple podcast app that comes preloaded on the phone. You click on it, search for John Canzano or Bald Faced Truth, and then subscribe to the podcast, and your phone will preload them, and you can listen to them anytime you want. And what I'm saying is, John Lovitz has been funny, he's been entertaining, he's been interesting, he's been talking about his career and his life and the Dodgers and Willie Mays and Woody Allen and politics and his act and the rise of a young comedian who has now got real staying power in the industry. All of that available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. Just make sure you're subscribed. I want to turn the attention, though, to something more serious. Comedy's always been one of those places where you could go to make fun of things that people couldn't make fun of anywhere else. Like if a politician said it, whatever. What do you think now of the comedians who are being penalized for something they tweeted or they said that may have been funny 5 or 6 years ago or may have been acceptable 5 or 6 years ago, but you cannot say today? What do you make of that?
I think it's ridiculous and absurd and horrible and just beyond ridiculous. It would be the same thing as criticizing somebody, as arresting somebody today because there's a new law that was, so arresting somebody 10 years ago that they did that was totally legal, and then today saying, well, now it's illegal, and you did it 10 years ago, you're under arrest. It's like that. It's ridiculous. And you know, times, you know, things change. So you could go, well, 10 years ago is acceptable. Then 10 years later, you go, could you see now why that would not be good? You go, yeah, now.
Yeah.
But it was different then. So you can't, you know, it's like saying actors in the 40s are horrible. Because, well, no, they were great. That was the style then. Styles keep changing, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, the fact that Kevin Hart couldn't do the Oscars, I thought was the most, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and I look back and I say,
and he should have hosted the Oscars, and I don't think he should have been asked to apologize. The Oscars, the Academy should have said, "Hey, he's evolved. You know, at the time this was acceptable, now it's not, and he's not going to be doing that kind of humor in the show." And he doesn't have to apologize. I don't think, you know, I don't think at all. I mean, I do stuff in my act, and I cross the line. That's what you do. You make fun of things. You go, well, someone's offended. Well, they're always offended. I mean, years ago, Jimmy Breslin, who hosted Saturday Night Live, you know, the great Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, I ran into him a year later. He said, are you doing stand-up? I said, no, I'm afraid. He goes, oh, BS. And I said, well, I get nervous. And I said to him, you know, I'm just worried. Like, what if I say something and there's – I was in my 30s at the time, right? I go, what? And then there's two old women in the audience, like my grandparents' mother's age, and they're offended. And he said, listen, if I come to see your show, I want to hear what you have to say. I don't want you to change your act because of who's in the audience. And I never forgot that. And I think he's 100% right. And, you know, it's like, you know, I've had people, if they don't understand irony, they're not going to understand my show. You know, I don't like labeling everybody. I don't like racism. I believe in treating everybody, you know, with respect. But I make fun of it.
Yeah.
And the point is to make, you see how ridiculous it is, you know? And so people get mad and then I'll say, you know, I'm Jewish, right? So I'll say, well, here's a joke you might like. Two Jews walk into a bar. They buy it. Well, they all laugh hysterically. And I go, oh, so you're laughing at the Jew joke. I'll remember that when I get to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so people will be laughing. Then you get to them, like, oh, I don't like that. I go, oh, but you laughed at the Jew joke, didn't you?
Yeah.
You laughed at everything else. I mean, I make fun of myself, you know? That's comedy. So if you don't like that, you shouldn't go, you know? But to say someone, you need to apologize for your jokes, it's like, why? You know, you're up there trying to make people laugh.
And so,
you know, I get hired a lot because I succeed.
Yeah.
But there'll always be one to be like, I didn't think that was funny. Okay. And that's okay with me because it's not that I shouldn't do the joke. It's that not everything is funny to everybody. So if you don't think I'm funny, that's okay with me because I don't think everybody's funny.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're not. I mean, I realize that. I've been to clubs where the audience is crying, laughing, and I'm like, I don't think it's funny. But I'm like, well, just because I don't think it's funny doesn't mean it's just not funny to me. Doesn't mean it's not funny to somebody else. Well, that's true with everything, you know.
And I think
pie. And I love boysenberry pie. Some people think it's gross. I love mayonnaise sandwiches. One of my best friends. Oh. I go, did you ever see mayonnaise sandwich? He gets nauseated.
Yeah.
See, you hate mayonnaise.
I wouldn't
think there's anything wrong
for
mayonnaise.
You can have your sandwich.
I can have it, but you don't like it. I think it's delicious.
And I also think that...
I just want to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mayonnaise. Oh, look at your face. See what I mean? There's my perfect point. That's what I have to say to all those jokes apologizing people.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise.
The Saturday Night Live has always become a place where...
Oh, by the way, in defense of Kevin Hart, I want to say, I saw the joke that he did and everything.
Yeah.
And the joke was, it wasn't homophobic. It was about him admitting, he's saying, I don't want my son to be gay, and it's a fear of mine. I don't understand. I'm not homophobic. I have nothing against gay people, but I have this thing.
Yeah.
That's just being honest. And that was years ago. Now, if you ask him, how do you feel about today? He'd probably say, you know what? I understand it more.
Right.
Yeah. Most people don't say they don't care. But back then, you didn't want your son to be gay. Not because you didn't love your son, but people always say, I love him still, but society doesn't accept this. It's going to have a tough time.
Yeah.
It's more about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I also think...
But things keep changing. They keep evolving.
SNL and comedy always was a place where we could go, where you could see people talking about things that people were afraid to talk about. And it was a safe place to do it.
Well, they would say things where it was so outrageous, but so funny. And the best example I always remember was Bill Murray had a movie critic character that was just like, making fun of the movie critics, like, hey, how you doing? Okay, Hollywood, all right, what's going on? Right, so he would do that all the time. So then one day, for whatever reason, they go, okay, here's the news with that guy. And he goes, hey, I'm just the movie critic, I'm doing the news, but I don't know, they have me doing it, okay. And anyway, so remember that they had the Pope died back then, and they had a new Pope, and like 11 days later, he died.
Yeah.
This new Pope.
Yeah.
So this is after the second Pope died after like 11 days. He goes, okay, here's a story. Okay, the Pope died. Oh, we did that story last week. Okay, da, da, da. I was like, oh, my God. He's talking about, and it was so funny and so outrageous. And that's the kind of humor they would do.
Yeah, and it worked.
And it worked, and it fit that character. You know, you just, there's a video on YouTube. You can look it up, an English comedian going, oh, I'm offended. He goes, all right, you're offended. Did anything happen? Did you die? Did you get sick? I don't like that. Okay.
Yeah. John Lovitz, thank you, man.
Good
stuff. Tonight, 8 o'clock show tonight, 7:30 Friday. Saturday, two shows, 7:30 and 10. Enjoy Portland in the meantime, John Lovitz. Have fun.
I will. And just remember, you know, if you don't want a comedy, don't go. That's what comedy is you're making fun of everything. And I'll just tell you, as a comedian, as soon as you say to me, or a real comedian, you say, you can't say that, the first thing that pops in my head is like, oh, well, now I have to.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you. John Lovitz, catch him at Helium Comedy Club. You can go to heliumcomedy.com for tickets. Really good stuff there. And a guy who has performed at a high level for a very long time. And I mean that with all respect. And he even brought his dog in studio. He did not want to make it about the dog. So as he's leaving the studio, I will make it about the dog. And of course, everybody, a lot of staff outside the studio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.